Hello, and welcome to the Keep It Local Maine podcast, where we tell the stories of local business owners, artists, and entrepreneurs, and learn more about what they do, who and what inspires them, their challenges, successes, and more. My name is Todd Regalinski.
And I am Kimberly Regalinski.
And we are the publishers of Keep It Local Maine, a magazine that helps to showcase local businesses to the people in and around their communities. Thank you for tuning in to our weekly podcast that you can subscribe to on most streaming services such as Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, Google Podcasts, and others. You can learn more about us at keepitlocalmaine.com and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube through the links in the show notes. In this episode, we'll be talking with Kathleen Pigeon from Lucky Pigeon Brewing Company in Biddeford, Maine's first dedicated gluten-free brewery. The original Lucky Pigeon and responsible for daily operations, Pidge began brewing at home in 2010 and transitioned to gluten-free brewing when she removed gluten from her diet. She brings her experience as a scientist, people leader, and operations manager to bear for Lucky Pigeon. And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
You are a Maine business. A Maine business. That means you're the backbone of our community and a force for good in Maine. At Gorham Savings Bank, we think you deserve a bank that sees your business as more than a balance sheet. Every Maine business deserves that kind of bank. Call, click, or come by to learn how we can help your business thrive. You're a Maine business. We're a Maine bank. Let's get to work. Gorham Savings Bank. Banking is believing. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the show, Pidge. We're so glad that you're here with us today.
Thank you.
This is great.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, this is exciting. So we're actually on location here at Lucky Pigeon Brewing in Biddeford. Super excited. So can you tell us, what was your inspiration for starting a gluten-free brewery?
So I've actually always wanted to own a bar or a brewery, and I don't think I really realized how long this had been a dream until I found some old journals from back in college and actually saw that I had written back then that I wanted to open a brewery. I had like lists of names that I was going to use, which were awful and I won't share, but I was 20, 21, whatever. But yeah, it's been a dream for a long time. And I think a lot of it had to do with just that vision of like community and being able to connect with other people in a setting that is fun and everybody's relaxed and just here to enjoy themselves and connections. So that was always kind of in the back of my head as something I'd want to do as a retirement plan or as another, you know, career. And I had been homebrewing for a while, probably about 10 years now. And 7 years ago, I had to cut gluten out of my diet. So as the thought of opening a place started to sort of solidify a little bit more, and then realizing that I had this niche market that now had become my way of brewing because I had to cut gluten out of my home brewing for this, you know, so that I could drink it. So all of it kind of started to roll together into this picture of, well, there's a market need. And there's a business idea, and there's this model that can be used for, you know, small breweries kind of creating local community and that kind of thing that I got really excited about. And the idea was kind of born from that. But it was several years worth of pulling together different pieces of it that kind of rolled into this nice picture of what we could do.
That is so cool.
So when did that kind of really get going as far as like the business plan starting? Because I remember I caught you on a, was it GoFundMe or Kickstarter?
Yeah, we did a GoFundMe early on. So essentially, probably about 5 years ago, I was on vacation, my wife and I with her sister and her husband. We always vacation together as a family. And I had gone out with my brother-in-law for a drink, and we sat there, looked around, and I was like, I can't drink most of this stuff. And I said, you know, I really want to open a gluten-free brewery. And he said, I'd like to do that with you.
Wow.
And I thought he was joking at first. And I was like, okay. And he's like, no, I'm really serious. I want to do that with you. And I'm like, okay, let's think about it. So 5 years ago, we started thinking about what would it take? What do we need to know? We went to the Craft Brewing Conference, which happened to be in Washington, D.C., which is near where he lives. That was convenient that year. We decided to go check everything out, learn as much as we could from that 4 days of being with other people in the industry. And I'd say most of what we learned is that we knew nothing. that was probably the biggest thing we took from it, was that, wow, we have a lot to learn.
Which is an important lesson.
It is an important lesson. And it's great to kind of maintain that humble, constant learning attitude no matter what you're doing. So we took that learning and all of the connections we made there, and just started kind of, you know, methodically going through what is it we need to know now? What is it we need to know in a year? What is it we need to know a year before we open? And we kind of worked through all of those steps of like, okay, let's build a business plan. I was actually in business school at the time getting my MBA. So it was convenient to kind of use this idea for some of the projects. And, you know, we started just building this out as an idea. And then about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, we started looking for spaces. We realized that the more time that went by that we kept thinking, this is a great idea. There's got to be better gluten-free beer out here. And there's none on the East Coast, you know, at the time.
Yeah.
And we were like, someone's going to beat us to it. We've got to get this started, because if we don't do it, we're not going to be first.
Right. Yeah.
And something about being first felt really exciting.
Yeah.
And we are the first one in Maine. So that still feels cool. Exciting. But yeah, we were looking at spaces. We kind of leaned towards the Biddeford area because of the excitement in the revitalization effort and the growth that's happening around here. I came down to look at a few spaces at one point and just feel like the energy around what's happening down here is tangible. You can feel it just walking down the street. There's restaurants and shops and little businesses opening all around us, and it's really exciting. So we were like, this is definitely where we want to be. And this space popped up, and we kind of were like, all right, this is it. Like, this is the space we need. It was a little unfortunate because it used to be a comedy improv club, and I think they didn't make it through the pandemic. So their story of leaving the space is probably less happy, but our story of getting the space is extremely happy.
It's a great space.
We walked in here and just kind of knew immediately this is the look we were going for. This is the feel. Yeah. It's got history. It's got character. The floors are amazing. The windows, the brickwork.
So I have to ask, so tell me what it was like. You had this dream years and years and years ago. So tell me that moment when it came to fruition, like, oh my gosh, my dreams come true. Like, when was that? What was that moment like?
It's so funny to think about it from that perspective, because I feel like every day is still a little bit surreal.
Yeah.
That I'm not sure I've had that moment.
Yeah.
I think I'm still going, wait, is this really happening?
Yeah.
It's, I mean, obviously the weekend we opened was really, that was huge. That was like all of our friends and family were here. The excitement was here. People who have been waiting forever, people who we didn't intend to tease, but we teased for months about when we were going to open because we had so many delays, are just so excited to be here.
Yeah.
You were here.
Oh, yeah. Friday night, I was like, you know, whatever. The creek rises. I shouldn't say that after.
Right. The creek actually rose down the street.
But I was like, I got to get there. I want to be there. You know, I want to be first. I want to be there the first night. And it was really cool walking in here and just seeing the place packed.
Yeah.
That was exciting for me, just because from a selfish standpoint, I'm like, I think they're going to make it.
Right.
I really want them to make it.
No, it's in that. So that night probably was the night of like, wow, like we did it. We opened it. And I actually said to everybody, the group of owners that night or later on that weekend, I said, this is the point where we can say, no matter what happens from here, we did it. We opened a brewery.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter what happens tomorrow. It doesn't matter what happens a year from now or 8 years from now. We can say we opened a brewery.
Yeah.
And so we kind of had that like, yes, we did it.
That's awesome.
But there's still a lot of moments that feel surreal. Like we're daily finding new things that are exciting or scary or any emotion, really.
Yeah.
It all gets rolled into this, and it's all this jumble of emotion that's mostly really positive.
That's so great.
That's good. I think owning your own business, there is that excitement, but in excitement, it can be that good excitement, or it can be the, as you're going over the top of a roller coaster hill, kind of excitement of just a little bit of terror or a lot of terror, depending on how you feel about roller coasters.
It's true.
And that, and on a daily, hourly basis sometimes. I mean,
for sure.
Maybe I'm just speaking from my own experience.
I think probably every entrepreneur, business owner could relate to that for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For sure. And I think it's good for us. We have a nice balance of a couple of us are more on the adrenaline, like a little bit of risk, like a little bit of rush, and a couple of us are a little more reserved, won't go on the roller coaster, would rather not have that feeling.
So it's
a good balance.
Yeah.
It is good balance.
Yeah, that's with us. So you were homebrewing before going gluten-free. What styles of beer were some of your favorites, and how did your experience with small batch brewing prepare you for this?
So my favorites are definitely lean towards more of the darker beers. I spent a lot of my time homebrewing trying to perfect a brown. Mm-hmm. I never got anywhere near what our brewer has been able to do with the brown we have. So thankfully for him, we have an amazing brown. Mm. So I spent a lot of time doing that. I really like a good red. Mm. I like a pale beer that has some sort of fruit flavor. Like I was a big fan of Long Trail's blackberry wheat before I had to give up gluten. Okay. Or Magic Hat number 9, like any of those ones that have just a subtle fruit flavor. So we're hoping to get to something like that later in the, you know, when we get back to summer weather. But yeah, those were the kind of styles I was working with. It really was more of the process that I enjoyed than necessarily making beer itself. It's I'm a scientist by background, and that kind of recipe building, testing, seeing what you can do. Are you consistent? Can you make the same thing again? Mm. All of that stuff was really kind of fun for me. And then it was just making things that I missed. So I would target a beer that I missed and try to make something similar. I forget the second half of your question.
There was another How did doing that at home kind of prepare you for this? Did it, or was it just sort of like, oh, this is a totally different ballgame?
Yeah. So on the brewing front, I think we recognized very early on that what I was making was good, but if we wanted to be a high-quality small brewery that we wanted to be, we had to hire a professional brewer who was probably going to take whatever it was I was doing to a whole new level. And that's kind of something that we targeted. So we knew right from the start there was no chance of getting through this without hiring somebody who is a professional brewer. We got really lucky with Scott. He's been a great find for us and been a really great teammate to work through these things. There's not been a style that we've thrown at him and said, we really want you to make this, that he hasn't been able to figure out in a handful of batches. So
yeah, that's great.
That part is super exciting. I think probably what I was doing before just really gave me a good understanding of the types of things we have to think about. Mm-hmm. I don't think I ever could have created all the recipes the way that he does. You know, that's not my skill set. Mm-hmm. But having a good understanding of what we do has allowed me to come in and train with him to be the backup brewer in case something goes wrong and he can't brew a batch. I can hop in and help.
Awesome.
And it's allowed me a little bit more understanding of what equipment we were going to need and what can we get away without and what do we need to have right away and what can we add later on, that kind of stuff.
So what are your careers outside the brewery like?
So we all still have full-time jobs outside of the brewery. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned, I'm a scientist by training, but I'm currently an operations manager over at IDEX Laboratories. Mm-hmm. So we do veterinary diagnostics, and my team is the team that tests all of our reagents that go into the products to make sure that they are what we think they are and that they're acting the way they're supposed to act. So we do reagent analytics. My wife also works at IDEX, and she is a communications and marketing specialist. Mm-hmm. So her background has always been in marketing communications, but right now she's doing a lot of work with employee communications for them. And then that obviously ties in really nicely with what we need here. Yeah. So she helps with all of the communication parts. She typically would probably jump in and be the one talking here. She's very good at talking about what we do, but she's not here today. And then our other two owners actually live in Maryland. Mm-hmm. It's Bev's sister, my wife's sister, and her husband. And Leslie is a realtor right now, but has a background in social work and has worked in the restaurant business a lot as part-time work. Mm-hmm. So she has an extensive amount of experience in just managing tasting room style things or restaurants. Mm-hmm. She knows how to handle customers. She knows how to make people feel comfortable and all of the fashionable things that need to happen, like setting up the wall of merch and making sure that our designs on all the merch look good absolutely come from Leslie. And Bev helps out with a lot of that. And then Nick is a commercial kitchen designer. He works for a company who designs commercial kitchens for other restaurants. And his background has always been in restaurants. He was trained chef and then managed restaurants for most of his career. Wow. So that training also has been huge as far as running the tasting room. But then he's also got a good understanding of setting up production space and understanding the spacing of things and, you know, how should we manage our whole production area in a way that can be most efficient and the workflow will work best.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So really our skill sets came together very nicely to create this fairly full picture. There's been a few things that we've hired out or needed to connect with others for. Obviously the head brewer, we talked about Scott pulling him in. We do have a company we work with called Clark's Design Services that does all of our social media presence. Mm-hmm. They've designed our logo, and so they do graphic design and all of our signage and whatnot. And that's a good friend of ours. They've been great to work with. Yeah, we've really just lucky to have lots of good friends and connections to play off of.
It's like tailor made to start something like this, really.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy when as you run it down, I'm like, that's okay. Yeah.
We couldn't have planned it if we'd if we'd have tried to plan that before we all got married.
Yeah.
True.
Couldn't have planned it better.
So what was the process like deciding what styles of beer you're going to have here?
Mm, good question. So I've talked a little bit about the brown already. Mm. The brown had to be a part of the picture. That was always in the deal. We knew we had to have an IPA. Everybody loves IPAs. I know it's not quite what it was a few years ago, but it is still the thing that people ask for most. And it is our top seller right now is the IPA. Mm-hmm. The other beers really came more from understanding what the grains were doing. And I think Scott kind of listened to the grains a bit on some of those and was like, you know, here is this different flavor profile that is not what he had worked with before. It wasn't barley. It wasn't the same types of things he had done. And he just listened to it and said, what can we make with this that will really complement the flavors that are coming from these grains and be able to incorporate it into a nice beer. So the blonde and the pale kind of came from that. And we really wanted to do the traditional styles well and then kind of start branching off into some other things. So a piece of what we worked for was just making sure that we had both consistency and quality in the core beers that we wanted to start with. And then, you know, we're already working on what's going to be coming next. And that will be exciting.
That's
too.
That's great.
But we want to make sure that what we were doing was really, really as true to the style as we could be without barley in the product.
Right.
Yeah.
So going into that, you've had some events here within your first few months. What are some of your plans for, you know, the winter moving forward?
Yeah. So we've been able to connect with a couple of groups that are doing events with, you know, specific to gluten-free. We had a charcuterie night that worked out really well. We have Miss G-Free Living does this charcuterie plan where we had all gluten-free crackers from some Maine-based companies and all gluten-free ingredients. And she had a great showing. So we opened on a Thursday for that. And then we have food trucks come in occasionally and some groups that will do like a pop-up style during the winter when they shut their food truck down or either that or they don't have a food truck and they'll come in and serve from inside the tasting room. So we've had Patty Wagon is a food truck. We've had Maize from Portland. We've had Sublime Taco. And we're going to continue to kind of bring food into the picture that way because we don't have the space or desire to do the food part of it, but we want to make sure that people have good gluten-free options. And then we do have other thoughts. We haven't really planned anything specific yet.
So stay tuned. Yes, that's great. I love that you guys do that. I love that you have those options for people that are gluten-free to come in. I know when we were here, we did some damage on that food truck.
Oh, yeah.
The food's been phenomenal.
The food has been amazing. Yes. So
I didn't even have, and I'm gluten-free.
Yeah.
I don't even think I ordered. I think you ordered.
I pretty much ordered everything on the food truck. I like take one of
everything except
one
for, you know, please, thank you, come again. I mean, she came in with a bag afterwards. I'm like, what did you get? And are we going to be able to pay our mortgage this month?
But it was worth it.
But I love that. It's such a great opportunity for people to try new things.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. And I mean, that was the first time that I think we had tried that.
Yeah.
And it's because we came here and, you know, it was
wonderful.
It was Maize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was fantastic.
It's been really interesting just being able to come in here and the environment is very relaxed.
Yeah.
It's really cool. And beer is outstanding.
Yeah.
And I've... The funny thing is, like, you mentioned having to have an IPA. Mm-hmm. And if anyone, and I'm celiac, so I have to be fairly careful about what I get for beer when it comes to gluten-free beer. I'd kind of gotten burned out on IPAs.
Yeah.
Because everything is light for gluten-free beer for the most part.
Yep.
And so when I saw the IPA, I'm like, okay, yeah, well, I'm going to get all of them and give it a try.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. I took a sip of it. I was like, all right, I'm not burned out on IPAs anymore. At least not this one. This is really good.
Thank you. Yeah, it's... I'm not typically... That's not my choice of beer. That's not my top choice. I would not initially walk in and order an IPA.
Yeah.
But I love our IPA. It's fruity. It's pleasant. It's hoppy without being too bitter.
Mm-hmm.
I get really excited about it.
Yeah. It's, I think it's outstanding. I think it's, I mean, then again, I can't say it's as good as any IPA I ever, well, right. It's been so long since I've had an actual IPA. Yes. I have no frame of reference anymore, but I imagine if I can go back to my taste memory, it's right up there. Really is.
Yeah. It's
good. And thank before you. I forget, so what's the best way for people to find out about events that are coming up and things like that?
Yes. So follow us on Facebook or Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We have Lucky Pigeon Brewing on both of those platforms, and we will announce anything that's coming up on those platforms and then follow it up with stuff on our website. So you can look at our website as well.
That's great.
Because y'all are pretty active on Instagram.
We're very active on Instagram and Facebook. And again, that's been a piece of it that we knew was going to have to be incorporated. That's the way people communicate these days. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it is the best way to reach the core customers that we're looking for. Because if you search for something gluten-free, we should hopefully pop up if you're looking for gluten-free beer.
So. Yeah.
So what has been one of the biggest lessons you've learned over like the last year?
Mm. Well, certainly one of the good lessons that it was a more of a reminder than a new learning, but one that we really have to take fairly seriously is just to know when to step out of the way when someone else has the skill set that you don't necessarily have. Mm. Like we talked about how there's four of us owners, there's a head brewer, there's other people we've pulled in, and everybody has a different skill set, and we do all have things that we're really good at. You know, and just making sure that we're recognizing that, you know, whatever this decision is, I may have an opinion, but it's not my wheelhouse and someone else should be really making the final decision.
Yeah.
I think that kind of open communication and hearing everybody out, but really knowing where the best decision maker is within the group has been critical to kind of getting this far and making all the decisions we've made and moving forward. So I think that's a huge piece.
Yeah.
I think another big piece of it for me has just been just recognizing how much our excitement translates. And so far, that's all been positive. We've all been so excited to do what we're doing. We're here working the tasting room. Our energy feeds off of each other. It feeds into the customers. Yeah. Everybody's, you know, happy to be here and excited. And you really feel it when you walk in. Mm-hmm. And I think taking clear note of that and knowing that if it ever goes in the other direction, if we're ever having a bad day or, you know, not feeling that energy, that maybe it's a good time to kind of step back and not share that with the customers. So I don't know if that's really a learning or more of just an observation, but I really love the way the customers seem to pick up on how excited we are about it, and they share in it and take part in that excitement.
That's great. So we love to ask this. I feel like there's so many different answers, and it's just so interesting to hear. But how would you say you define success?
So we're thinking right now about sort of forecasting and looking at what the next year is going to be and maybe a little bit beyond that. I guess success to me is feeling like we've come to a point where we know we have been able to bring this beer and environment back to people who haven't been able to have it in so long, be able to sustain ourselves financially with, you know, knowing that our customer base has to be bigger than just the gluten-free people. We had to be able to have a beer that was good enough that anybody was going to enjoy it. But what it looks like long-term, I'm not really sure yet. We have some visions of expansion and wanting to open other places. We talk in very general terms about what the next 5 years might look like. You know, I think at some point we're going to have to understand, is our goal growth or is our goal to create community and really have something local that we're proud of? And I think we're already doing that small scale, and how much we can maintain that and then continue to grow. And I think for me, that's always kind of looked like creating small communities in multiple places.
That's great.
I don't want any one place, if we do expand to other places, to ever not feel like a small hometown local brewery. I want it to be focused on the community and the area where it is. And I think that's kind of been my motto looking at the way that we plan to grow. I want to think big, run small. I want to take this approach of making sure that everyone you walk into feels like your neighborhood place.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, that in having, you know, your IPA on tap everywhere. I'm a little selfish in that, I guess.
You know, that would be cool. So we have a little bit of a conundrum with the on tap anywhere else, because we have to worry about cross-contamination. Yeah. So we don't actually intend to put our beers on tap in most places. We intend to share cans.
That's smart.
Because of the lines. We want to make sure that, you know, and I know most places do clean their lines and that there are probably places we could trust to take good care of the beer, but that risk of cross-contamination isn't worth it to us right now where we don't have the capacity to manage it.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You see, this is why I don't run a gluten-free brewery. Because I would just be like, put it everywhere. Don't think about it.
And we would love to put it everywhere. Yeah. We just might put it in cans.
That's perfect.
You know, I'll settle for that.
Yes.
I'll settle for that. Another question that we always like to ask, because we are admitted inspiration junkies, is who or what inspires you?
Oh, boy.
That is always a hard hitter.
I know, right? I mean, it might sound obvious and probably lots of people's answer, but my mother for sure has been a huge inspiration. She, you know, started a family very young and didn't have a lot to go off of. And we just kind of, my family's extremely supportive and always has been, both from when I was born all the way through doing this and getting through to this space where we're running our own business and they come up and support us. But, you know, watching somebody like her kind of navigate her own independence and teach that to us through modeling, not necessarily verbally saying you should be responsible and independent and be able to do cool things in your life. She just kind of did it. And we just got to watch and sit back and say, wow, like she went through a lot of challenges raising a family young and look at where she's at. And kind of looking at that piece and knowing that what we're doing hopefully is kind of showing that kind of stuff that we learned from just watching the way that she operates. And I think inspiration for me really comes a lot from both my family and just the idea of community and connections. Like I think a lot of what we're doing and what we're trying to achieve has to do with bringing people back and connecting people in ways that isn't always what you see at a brewery. And it's been one of my favorite components to, I don't know if I call it a surprise, but I guess it was a little surprising, but sitting here running the tap room and watching customers come in who don't know each other and you start up a conversation with one and somebody else hears that and we all have this common ground. There's this immediate like, well, I'm gluten-free too. How long's it been for you? And did you try that restaurant or have you had this bread or, you know, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden the customers are talking.
Love that.
And now the third one sitting behind them wants to jump in the conversation because they have something to add. And we have this community that's built off of common ground that you don't get in just any other bar or brewery automatically.
Yeah.
You know, you can build it and you can find those ways to connect. But I feel like here it just sort of happens organically and it's really been fun to watch.
Yeah.
So if you can call that a source of inspiration.
Absolutely.
I think community and connections and that that kind of thing has been part of my inspiration.
Yeah.
I'm sure the other three owners have different inspirations.
Yeah.
And I hate to talk for all of us. So that's I think great. I'll let them answer that question someday on another podcast or
that's
something.
That's beautiful.
Right on. Well, Pidge, thank you so much for being on the show with us. We really appreciate it. And for taking some time out.
Thank you so much.
Getting towards the end of the day here on Sunday, so we appreciate you taking time. Be sure to follow Lucky Pigeon on Instagram and on Facebook. And also, you have a mailing list on your website, correct?
We do, yes. Join the mailing list, and that will also be a source of news when we have new offerings coming out or new places that we're being sold.
Mm-hmm.
Anything exciting for events coming up, we'll send out an email.
That's great.
So for folks, they can definitely find you pretty easy. You're right down here in Biddeford and the mill, and there's even got some parking spaces out here now.
We do. We have a few parking spots. Yeah. Hopefully we're easier to find. That was a challenge in the beginning, but it's a tricky thing to, our address is Main Street, but our entrance is on Laconia Street. So if you can find that cross street, that's the best way to go. It's where our parking spots are.
Yeah, and you've got the nice little sandwich board out front, so that helps.
Which is
that
great,
helps.
Yes.
But then again, anyone who's tried to search for gluten-free stuff in a grocery store, you've learned some patience already.
We know this
so,
is
so, you know, it just fits
it's
in
totally
with the overall
true.
Thing.
Yes.
And when you come down here, be sure to buy some merch, as well as you have cans to go, which is awesome. So go ahead and get some of all of them.
Yes, fantastic.
And thank you again.
Thank you again.
And we wish you great success in going forward. And I especially am a little bit biased. great success.
Yeah. Well, thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Excited to chat with you today. It was wonderful.
Once again, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Gorham Savings Bank, and encourage you to check them out through the link in the show notes. And thank you again for listening.